Welcome to the episode that I've been hinting at making for the last 3 months, and yes, indeed, you have stumbled upon All About Form. Hello, and welcome back to Diddy and Hawthorne in the In-Between. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz, and you're listening to my podcast about the relevancy of literature in the 21st century. Now bookmark that book, and let's begin. I don't know about you guys, but I love breakfast time. You are sitting at my breakfast table right now, and I just want you to partake in this magical moment with me. I know you're probably listening to this pretty late at night if you're in the States, but hello, good morning. It is Tuesday morning for me. I'm a little late on this episode, some things happened, but we're getting past that, we're publishing the episode anyway. I'm saying my announcements now rather than at the end of the episode because they're quite big. Number one, if you're a longtime listener, you know that the most anticipated series on my show every year is Horrifying Classics, which airs for the entirety of October. And this year, I'm extraordinarily excited to announce that the entire season is going to be about Stephen King, and I'll be reading and going through 6 of his novels, including, but of course, not limited to, It and The Shining. Number two, thank you to everyone who gave me feedback last week about how I should expand the channel. I've been kind of thinking about it a lot, and I've decided actually to revamp the software of the blog. So we'll still have the blog classic at blueberry.com, but I'll be adding a blog that has much more than just episodes, links, and descriptions. I'll be moving all of the Twitter content into there, so I'll just be closing the Twitter and adding all of the content there. Also posting articles that I've written about things like fashion and personal finance and propaganda, lots of interest and posting, as well as some of my contemporary photography repertoire. And that is all going live on October 1st, right before the first episode of Horrifying Classics. Right off the bat, I'm going to start with some nitty-gritty linguistics terms, because I know we're all nerds, I'm serving my audience, let's get into it. Sentence versus utterance. So a sentence is the written form of an utterance. Utterances must be spoken in order to count as an utterance, and the main difference in modern linguistics today is that all utterances are speech acts, meaning that in more modern linguistics, not in older linguistics, we take everything that people say to be utterances that set out to change the conditions of the world in some way. I find this to be incredibly interesting because sentences on their own are in a different class than utterances, and speech acts, as I understand them, really have more to do with the act of speaking than of writing, for example. Though obviously there is the idea that the written word is just really powerful as well, and even more lasting in some cases, such as with laws or a constitution, than the spoken word. I've left a more thorough link about speech acts in the description if you're interested. Books versus novels. The distinction between books and novels has come up in some earlier episodes before, but here it is again. A book is a written work that is, by my definition, between about 150 and 2,000 pages in length. That can be of any genre, be it nonfiction, fiction, poetry, physics, etc. A novel, on the other hand, is really strictly fiction. All novels are books, in other words, but all books are not novels. I'm gonna say that again. All novels are books, in other words. But not all books are novels. It's the morning, you guys. Bear with me. Novella. There is a beautiful New Yorker article that I've linked in the description about novellas. I would really recommend reading it. And novellas are interesting because they are in between the lengths of short stories and books, roughly between 17,500 and 40,000 words, but also in some definitions, they importantly include this element of prose fiction or attempted literary innovation. And the people who think that an element of prose is involved cite books like Conrad's Heart of Darkness, James's The Turn of the Screw, and Kafka's Metamorphosis, to name a few. Like a novel, novellas are also necessarily works of fiction, otherwise they would go into another category, like extended essay, for example. So a short story Interestingly, short stories are also coming up as categorized in the realm of fictional works, and I would say that at the heart of the short story is something that has been developed from the 1920s on because of the limitations that early newspapers put out for publications, but I have the feeling that really the word count of something around 15,000 words or less is what is more important than, say, whether or not it's a true work of fiction. Obviously, if it is something academically aimed, I would put it instead under the next category, which is essay. So essays are fairly self-explanatory, I would say. I would say, though, that essays are specific to specialized academic fields, so when one writes an essay, it is an attempt to explore or create within that field. I would also note that school before university is no exception to that rule when you write an essay, because what teachers in high school and often earlier are trying to get you to do is write at length about some specific topic, which is in turn essentially priming you to be later able to write about your field. There are literary essays, such as within the works of David Foster Wallace, but again, those are trying to accomplish something specific just within the field of writing. So a journal. Journals versus magazines are hard to differentiate, but I do think that in the end magazines are much more casual than journals, and that journals often have material over a cohesive theme, whereas magazines have maybe a headliner and then a bunch of other somewhat related but not really related content. Magazines are also much more focused on the visual than journals, and that's what makes them kind of a unique art field in terms of literature. So some of these publications do bridge the gap, however, between magazines and journals. For example, Cicero, the German political magazine, as well as Architectural Digest, actually, because of how curated the content is thematically, and also the text cannot work without pictures. They're kind of codependent here. There are black and whites, though, and I even think that really curated magazines like the fashion magazine Kinfolk, I would say, are still in the realm of magazines due to their prioritization of pictures and digital content over things like articles and text. By the way, text is just a blanket statement. It's whatever you've been reading that applies to anything that's written. It could be a poem, it could be a play, it could be an article, an essay. Text is really a blanket term. People use it in analysis all the time, and I usually probably end up using the word text in almost every essay I write about literature. An article. So an article can be academic or not academic. I would say that articles are the fraternal twin sisters of essays, but an article really, I think, is something meant to be published in a magazine, blog, or journal, and that is the distinction. Moving right along, a letter. A letter is specifically sent between two private parties, whether that be two groups of individuals, two actual individuals, what have you. My question here is, what do we do with things like emails? I would say that a personal distinction for me is that emails are less formal than letters, just automatically, and there's even something about a formal email that just isn't the same as a formal letter, but our society nowadays has digitized the letter. Basically, the letter has become the email, and we're all members here of this society, so I'll let you reconcile that for yourselves. A speech. What gets interesting about speeches is essentially what we do when a speech is written and not performed, because my definition for a speech is something that is written for performance with a live audience. So think of MLK's I Have a Dream speech, your college graduation speeches, etc. And I can give an example here of this problem with Kurt Vonnegut, maybe also Malcolm Gladwell and David Sedaris, other very well-known event speakers who write speeches and publish them, sometimes without having spoken them live. And this is essentially pertinent in the work of Kurt Vonnegut specifically, as he would write fictional interviews with himself and fictional speeches with himself. And I would say that in the end, these unspoken speeches are still speeches if they're written in a way so as to be presented. Academic speeches, quote-unquote, that I never performed. However, I'm thinking of some academic talks, actually, that I came across in my research recently. I would characterize those, on the other hand, as essays, due to the fact that they're written principally to be read and not to be spoken, and that's a very distinct difference, especially in a language like English. I wanted to mention that as we're getting to the end of the episode here, that plays and poems are also fairly distinct genres here and rather obvious categories on our list that I didn't want to necessarily expand upon, but also didn't want to leave out entirely. I could probably do a whole episode about plays and a whole episode about poems just because there's so much there to uncover. Okay, so I also have to mention that these categories are not mutually exclusive, meaning that they overlap and dance with each other literally all the time. Kurt Vonnegut's brilliant novel Palm Sunday has plays, poems, speeches, and interviews inside of it. Some epic poems also turn out to be novels or plays, and there's really no end to the extent of how these categories can play around. But I do hope that after today you can take something away from how we characterize and categorize these different forms of literature. If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from me, there is an episode of DH&I for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our back catalog of episodes. 2019 is the year of Didion, so if you'd like to follow along in my quest to read Joan Didion's collective works or learn more about the movement to bring lit back to people, everything can be found at didionandhawthorne.blueberry.net, and remember that blueberry is spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y. Now you can also follow the show on Twitter with @DidionIn, 2 N's total. I'll be posting about new lit releases, reading lists, and of course the new projects and episodes relating to DH&I. Still there? One more thing then. Remember that leaving a comment or review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any other Guilty Pleasure podcast platform helps leverage the show so that other literature enthusiasts can find the community. In other words, it helps a ton. Auf Wiederhören!